You guys are probably like, whoa, no hair, makeup shit. I mean, to be honest, no. To be honest, it's one of those days. It's one of those days. And you guys know that I know that you know I'm extremely honest with you. And I am just like not, I was not feeling makeup today. I was not. And I think that's so important for today's society, for girls to not feel this pressure. I remember I was talking to somebody yesterday and I said, oh, when I went to high school every day, I put makeup on. And I remember they said every day, I said every day I put makeup on. Hey, Jen, how are you? I would love to
hear your thoughts on
this. Everybody, our guest today, Miss Jen Ponton, how are you?
I am great. How are you?
I am good. So I was just talking about how I would love it to be more normalized, especially in today's world, for kids or teenagers, that we don't, girls don't have to wear makeup every day.
And I love that.
You know, I remember growing up, and I was just sharing this story before you popped up. I remember growing up, I was telling somebody yesterday, every day in high school, I was like eyeliner, mascara, the whole thing. And I'm like, now I'm like, unless I'm going to an event or like it's something really important, like I am not going to put myself through that. And today,
absolutely,
it was just one of those mornings. I was like, I'm not even going to, I apologize, but I kind of don't, because
there's no apology needed. It's your face. It's exactly what it's supposed to be. It's your face. Look, it's you.
So, I mean, how were you? What were you like in high school? I want to know what Jen was like in high school. Because
that's so weird. Made my own clothes. So you're from Long Island, yes?
Yes, I saw you're from Jersey.
Exactly. So we're technically family.
Exactly. Pretty much. Exactly. We drink the same water, folks.
Absolutely. I was kind of punky. I was sort of punky poser. I was punky poser. So like once Hot Topic like opened near me, I would go to Hot Topic. I would shop at Delia's. Like it was, I was very into like skater brands, even though I had never set foot on a skateboard at all.
Me either. The
first time, and it's not gonna happen now. Skates,
I was like, oh, I can never do Xanadu because that ain't never happening. It's so funny how like the styles that we thought were cool. Like I remember growing up, the girls had like where I lived, they had everything was like the little Prada backpacks.
Oh with, Lord.
Like, yeah, with like the Aeropostale, like, you know, little collared shirts, layered. Like,
yes.
Yeah. There was so much going on back then. and it wasn't just one tank top. It was like four tank tops layered.
Right. And they were hoping that it would sort of work as like an ersatz bra.
Right. And I was like, no, like I was still like, look. I've been a plus size kid my whole life. I've been getting my bras in like the regular department like forever. Like, you know,
yes.
Like, those girls who would like walk around with the four camis and be like, oh, I'm all tucked in. I'd be like, I would need like 75 of those things and a strap of duct tape to be like,
absolutely,
to hold this in.
When they would like build in those little tiny shelf bras. And I was like, who are we kidding?
Yes.
We know this is not for us. I'll see myself out.
Yes, the built-in bras. And they got me every time. I was like, oh, so it's just another piece of fabric.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that you made somebody sew. That's not going to help me at all. That's
right.
But so you grew up in Jersey. I grew up on Long Island. I think there's something so special about the East Coast and growing up in the East Coast, or on the East Coast rather.
Absolutely.
I mean, what was your childhood like in Jersey?
Well, I'm f- so like I've lived all over North Jersey, but I grew up in the sticks. So I grew up in like farm country. I knew kids who went cow tipping. We didn't have a lot of people at all. So I'm very hicky from Jersey. And so like I had access to good bagels and good pizza and like thick accents, but my actual upbringing was very country and very rednecky.
But that's kind of nice, though, to have some quiet. I think, you know, that's what I love about Jersey, Long Island, and even Staten Island, is that it is so close to the hub of New York. So you get those towns like you're talking about, and then you get the towns like I grew up in, kind of just suburbs, and then you're literally a train ride away from one of the greatest cities in the world, with all the musical theater you can possibly handle, all the fashion, all the food, all the culture. That just, I mean, did you go into New York a lot? Was that something that was big for you?
I didn't go in a ton because my parents kind of hated the city. So I would go in with friends and their parents, and we would have, you know, field trips, and we'd go see a big musical every year with school. And I would go to the Thanksgiving parade every year.
Can I tell you, Jen, growing up, that was my favorite thing to watch on TV. Like, it wasn't Thanksgiving until I turned on Channel 4. NBC, and I would put on, I would hear Al Roker, and my Thanksgiving was started.
Yes.
For me, everybody always asks me, like people will ask me on the red carpet, like, what was like the greatest moment through the whole Hairspray thing? For me, performing at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade took the cake.
Like, oh, you must have been out of your mind.
I was out of my mind excited. I was like a kid who literally like was like let free in FAO Schwartz and
gave
like all the candy in the world and like all the money in the world. Like, I literally was just like on top of this float. I felt like, I don't even know, I felt like Santa Claus. It was incredible. It honestly was like, it was the most. I remember looking out into the crowd, seeing like so many new faces, but then like a bunch of people that I grew up with surprised me.
Oh my God.
Signs, and I was just like up there bawling, but I'm like, keep it together. You have to sing. It's the Macy's Thanksgiving Parade. You got me there.
That's beautiful. That is, that's glorious. That's the dream, right?
I mean,
achieved.
Especially as a New Yorker, just all right, one in the basket for that. I'll take the win. Talking about taking the win, you have been winning. You have just been working, girl. You have been going. I was just looking at your IMDb, and tell me how you got started in this wild and wacky and wonderful business that we all love.
It's been a minute, and I gotta tell you, I have been waiting to talk to you for like 15 years.
Yeah.
really, truly, because you're a couple years younger than me. I had just graduated from college, I think, by the time they were casting the feature for Hairspray. And then once it was released that it was you and all the articles came out like Cold Stone, she's 17. I was like, oh my God, she's 17? That must be so amazing. She's still in high school. That's incredible. And then like, and I've just not creepily kept my eye on you as time has gone by. And I was like, oh, I can't wait until she like comes back to the East Coast and we can hang out. So this has been a long time in the making.
Oh, I love that. Thank you. Yes. A long time coming. Well, we are here now. So
we are here now against all odds, honestly.
Zoom has us. It's like,
Zoom has us.
So I'm thrilled to talk to you too, because you've had quite a journey as well. And, you know, as women in this business, that's a task in itself, you know, but then being different women,
for sure.
You know, I think that poses, you know, I think while it poses a lot of difficulties or hurdles for us to try and get over, because there are not as many roles out there as we would like, I think personally,
absolutely,
or plus size women or whatever, I also think, you know, when we get to play these characters that are so special, you know, and so it kind of makes up for it a little bit. But I know, I mean, what's your take on that? Would you love to see, you know, way more plus size characters in mainstream television and streaming?
Oh God, yes. A thousand percent. So like at the time that you were making the film and I was just starting to like get my real world theater experience. And so I was doing like really, really late night, like St. Mark's Place theater, you know, imagine.
The places that just like tick a little part of my heart, you know?
Yes, exactly. I was auditioning for musical theater all the time. And I was landing like weird little plays that I loved. I love weird little plays. But I was auditioning for musical theater and flummoxed because, as I'm sure your experience was up until that point, you know, when you are a plus size girl who loves theater, congratulations, you're going to be cast as the mother, the grandmother, the Arvide in that terrible show that I cannot stand. You know, we don't get to be the Adelaides. We don't get to be the Sarahs. And what that sets you up for once you graduate, even if you've done a ton of those roles, and even if you're really excellent, is you show up looking like you or me with a baby face at like 22 years old. And they're like, your resume makes no sense because I'm going to want to cast you as a teenager. And all of your experience is playing like these crone-like figures. It's
very, very true. I look back at the roles that I played in high school and it was like Mrs. Lovett, Kate and Kiss, Madame Thénardier. You know, it's like all of those like amazing massive roles, but they're women in their 40s, like late 40s, right, early 50s, and it's like you're just like, yeah, casting directors when you're in your like early 20s, late teens are going to be like, what, where do we place you?
And I love that your high school did Sweeney Todd.
Oh, my high school was wild. They did shout out to South High in Great Neck, because I will tell you, it was Dr. Pamela Levy. She was the choral director over there at the time, and she's my personal mentor. And every year they would do an opera, like a full opera. When I got there, we did Carmen, and I played Carmen. That was insane. I had never sang a lick of opera in my life or French, and she taught me like for 6 months. I don't read sheet music either. So she, for 6 months, plunked out every note on the piano, taught me word by word. I mean, this woman is incredible. So when it came to like, I think it was junior or senior year, she was like, we're not going to do an opera this year. We're going to do Sweeney Todd because it's as big as an opera.
Yes.
Then when we took on Sweeney Todd, we realized, oh, it really is an opera.
It sure is. Oh my God.
But so, I mean, I had come from a school having like those incredible theater, you know, experiences and playing these roles, like, it was so much fun. It was so, they were honestly the times of my life. I bet.
Yes. Those are definitely like the, as you age up, those are the dreams for sure.
Yeah. I'm like, and now I'm like, I'm sitting here, you know, it was funny. Somebody said to me, they were like, well, if they ever did a remake of a movie, and then they said, who would you want to play? Like, you know, I said, well, you know, they already did the remake of Sweeney Todd.
Yes.
And I was like 25 when they did it. So they would have, you know, it would have never, again, going back to the casting thing, you know, would have never happened in a million years.
Right. Right. So we can dream.
I'm going to do. Yeah, we can dream. We can dream. But that's what it's all about, isn't it? I mean, how did your dream get started? How did you say acting and performing, this is something I'm going to do?
I feel like you can probably relate to this. I've known since day one on this planet. Yeah. I was like, oh, there has to be a place for me. I'm kind of hammy and loud and I want to make you all laugh and I probably want to sing too. And I think I could probably soft shoe this. Oh, I guess I could be a cruise director or an actor. Yeah. Or like an aerobics instructor. And honestly, yeah, those were like my three dream jobs.
I love that. All aboard. Welcome, ladies. I could just,
yes. I would be such a prime cruise director, but I mean, now post COVID, goodbye. Like,
I mean, can I tell you, I performed after Hairspray on a couple of gay cruises and they
really
a blast.
Yes. Were you the headliner? Like it was just Nikki's Cabaret?
I had my one woman show and I was doing it at the time. It was so much fun. And I will tell you, back then when I was straight, I used to tell, I'd be like, oh my gosh, you know what? I'd be like, even if I was gay, I'd be like, even if I would never go on a straight cruise again. Gay cruises are so much fun. Now, of course, you know, obviously I've come out and I'm like, yeah, why would you ever want to go on a straight cruise ever again?
Why?
I mean, they're so much fun, but it kind of just feels like you went to the mall and then all of a sudden you're on a ship with those people.
Oh my God, that's perfect. The mall just took off to sea and now you're stuck with them.
Kind of just feels like Roosevelt Field just whoop. Took off down the Atlantic, and then now here you are for a week and a half on a ship with all these people, and like you're just like, oh God, at least I hope I went at the four slot machines. When they're like, oh, we have the big casino, and you get there, it's like four slot machines. You're like, oh.
Yeah, right, of course. But there are so many cigars there. There aren't even that many people. There's so many cigars. People just go to there to smoke. I don't know if I'm going to miss cruise ships.
It's the one time, I think it's probably the one time a year when men are like, yeah, we're going to have our cigars this year. And then they're just down there the whole time, both away.
Whole time, just at sea, like ruining their lungs.
Exactly. So yeah, gay cruises are where it's at. If you ever get a chance, go on a gay cruise.
Heck yeah. By the way, and coming out, more things in common, like, it's a freaking journey, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a wild journey for me, because I think for so long after Hairspray, there was that, I'm sure, as you know, when you play a character, you can get so wrapped up in being that character, not just for the purposes of the project, but for other people, because other people love them so much. And I guess for a long time, I was kind of living as Tracy, because she made so many people so incredibly happy. And I really wasn't taking time to like really, really get to the root of who Nikki was. And I think it was really when I was in my late 20s, and yeah, that's when it kind of started to unravel. And by 30, I was like, oh, we are off to the races and gay.
Yes.
And then, you know, I came out to my team, of course, and they've been super supportive, but it got, you know, to a point where like I was at Drag Con with a partner, an ex-partner, and like this drag queen, I had them, I'm on my podcast in like last year, and she kept saying, well, you're with your girlfriend. And I was like, and I hadn't been outed yet. And I was just like, and so I was trying to divert away. And I didn't like that uneasiness in my chest. I didn't like that I had to hide anything on my show. And I was like, no. It's time. So yeah, I ripped the old Band-Aid off and came out. And so June 20th, this episode, I think will probably be up by then or right around it. But yeah, will be 1 year that I've officially been out to the media. So there we go.
I'm 1 year after you.
No!
Excuse me, not 1 year. I'm 1 week after you. I came out on my birthday.
Congratulations.
Happy Pride.
Happy Pride to you too, my friend. That's
happy
so
1 year of out and queer. Or however
one
you
year.
Want to,
you know, it's like time, I guess they say time flies when you're having fun.
Indeed. So I guess,
you know, I don't know about you, but you know.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. you know, I think it's just, it's fun. And we're not saying we're whores people. We're saying that we are having fun by genuinely living our authentic self.
Oh my God.
Living. It's like there's a whole other lightness about me. Like I just, and I even notice it. Like I walk around a little bit lighter. I don't, you know, take so much baggage with me every single day. Do you find that?
Absolutely. And I have to ask you if you've had this experience. I have learned, especially in the last like 4 months or so, I've learned that coming out for me was the keystone to so much more authenticity across the board in terms of like owning my opinions on things and being less placatingly malleable, which is a very feminized trait and something that we learn socially and we learn from our mothers and is prized in women and femmes. But I'm owning my opinions more. I'm owning my truths more, to the point where I even finally disclosed an attack that I had gone through 10 years ago. And that was something that I felt that I was always going to just carry with me, that it was like my burden, my darkness, my shame. And something about coming out and being living in that and being authentic and finding love in a very deeply authentic way allowed me to release that. So like, just mind-blowing levels of things unlocking that have created even more lightness, that are not just like, how am I showing up in the world in how I identify and who I love and what I experience and what other people, how other people code me, but also like, oh shit, like I'm really accepting myself on a level that I never have.
I think you hit something right there that I've always noticed in myself is I was born a people pleaser. Yes. I would do anything in the world to make anybody smile because I'm half Catholic, half Jewish. So I have half.
You're a cashew.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a cashew. I have half Catholic guilt and half Jewish guilt. And it's like, I always feel bad if I'm not like making somebody happy or something. So I'm always like the biggest people pleaser in the world. Mm-hmm. And once coming out and cementing myself as this is who I am, not Tracy, not a character, this is who I am. And putting parameters, border, boundaries, whatever you want to say, creating certain things that were for me that I had never done before, you know? Yeah. And I think that was for me, like very, very awakening, just saying like, this is how I'm going to live my life. And this is my life to live. And like taking ownership of my life rather than letting like, oh, well, you know, we'll just go. And now I was like, you know, and I it's crazy that I say this, but I do credit my past relationship. She lit a match under me that just ignited me in my business. And I thank her to this day. I tell her, I'm like, nobody lit a match under my ass. And nice. You know, like you did, I said. And so, you know, it was very much, you know, a big awakening. And 30 help being there.
Yes,
you
know? 1,000. 30 is such a catalyst.
Yes.
It's such an energy shift.
To just jump. Ooh. Just do it. And
absolutely.
I think I was 32 when I came out, but yeah, I don't remember anymore, but after 30, people always, I always get these cameo requests and people are like, oh, I'm turning 30. I'm like, oh my gosh, no, it is way more fun than 20s. I'm having more fun in my 30s than I did in my 20s. It seems like a totally different life, but how do you feel about the whole 20 to 30?
Oh God, I would not go back to my 20s for anything in the world.
Right?
At all. at all. I mean, I only came out last year and I'm about to turn 37. So I came out at 36. Nice little late bloomer, baby queer. But
me too, don't worry.
Yes. When I was 30, I gave up a bunch of really like energy vampire frenemies, and they had been long installed because, like you, Jewish, very people pleasy. And I was finally like, no, I'm done with this. Something just like changed in my DNA. And I shucked off a lot of these very formative friendships, but that were horrible for me. If yeah. I had seen someone else going, someone that I love going through it, I would have been like, girl, get out. What are you doing?
I had an amazing friend in the business say to me when I told him, I was talking to him and he's been an actor forever. And I said to him, I said, I don't know what it was about turning 30, dude. He goes, you reached your bullshit quota.
Yes. Bullshit goes, quota. I love you that.
Reached your bullshit yeah. quota. So that's, you know, in terms kind of that of, you know, you find out the people who are there for the right reasons. You find out the people who are there for how can this benefit me? And then you start to separate them. And then those people fall into the bullshit quota. And then we yes. reach our cap and we're like, time to take them out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not literally, we're not murderers.
We're not, I mean, I'm but you know, we are from Jersey and Long Island respectively. So
right, exactly. I'm something from Long like Island, that happens. Not Staten Island, that's not. I love Staten Island. Please don't come for me, Staten Island.
Someone has to claim them. We have to just embrace them.
They do.
Like the Statue of Liberty herself.
Right? She just like, I am here forever. I'm going to protect you, Staten Island. It's okay.
Yes.
I'm going to protect you for the rest of the world. I got you. Oh my gosh. I've managed to completely just have all of New York hate me now. This is fantastic. No. Isn't that what every host wants?
We must defend the defenseless. That's only fair.
I've only been there like once or twice, but I will say this. When they do a reality show on VH1, like the Mafia ones, I am tuned in like you wouldn't believe.
Oh my God.
I've seen every single episode of Mob Wives. I mean,
is that who Big Ange is? Is that her show?
Yeah, she was on that show. Bless her soul. She's been passed a few years, but she was like the greatest character, like a gorgeous heart. You know, that's what I'm saying. There are people like her in New York, just like these larger than life, beautiful, wonderful characters who just, and I think that's just something special that the East Coast, you know, you're born with it.
Inherently, all the way down to Florida. The second you find out someone's from Florida, you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. This whole relationship is going to be a ride. Got it.
I'm dying right now. Oh my God. It's so true. Oh gosh.
They can't even help it.
It's like, you know, the whole bless his soul, my grandfather was an inherent New Yorker and a New York cop and was in the Navy. And anytime the poor man saw somebody with like a Florida driver's plate, you know, a license plate, he'd be like, oh, George is out for a Sunday drive. He's like, here we go. Like, he'd be like, everybody get ready, start telling a story. Like, and the thing was that we had so much family down. His mother moved to Florida when she got older. So they would drive down there like twice a year to go visit her. My poor grandfather, those rides, he was like, ay, ay, ay. He
couldn't. Oh, no.
My grandmother, bless her, had the patience of a saint. She'd be like, and she was from Boston. She'd say, it's okay. I'll do all the driving. I'll pack the car. You know? but it's true, that whole Florida, yeah, you're like, oh,
for sure. Yes, And like, you're kind of like us, so we have to embrace you, but also you like deal with alligators and you never wear real shoes.
Real, yes, where are the real shoes? I mean, I remember, speaking of real shoes, you're bringing me back. I remember my Aunt Pam and Aunt Fran had clear shoes that I thought were the coolest things I had ever seen. I thought, wow. I mean, there has to be pictures of me somewhere. And if they are, dear God, mom, I'm telling, I'm warning you. She has one photo already, like for a childhood photo that my brother now has it in his possession. And I told him if it ever gets out.
Yes, I love those.
To God, Joey, I said, you have no idea. And he recently texted it to me the other day. He was like, remember, ... And I was like, not funny at all. But we would go down there and yeah, the clear shoes. I remember that. And just, it's Florida. My best friend's from Florida. She lives down there. But she's originally from Seattle. So she's always like, you know, I don't know about this place. She's an
sure actress, stranger too. In a strange land.
Well, too, and you know, the acting, you know, it's very, very different in Florida. It's very
really
different game. Yeah, it's a very different game, and it's an interesting slope, and it's not LA, it's not New York, it's not Georgia, it's not even like Toronto. It's kind of just like in the middle doing something off to the, you know, in the Florida way, I guess.
Well, that's, I guess, who was pumping out like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys and like the Mickey Mouse Club, I think. So yes. There's
some. It's so true. They're all from there. They're all from there.
I'm going to write a book. I'm going to interview everyone and write a book.
Somebody asked me, okay, so now I have to ask you this question because a friend of mine asked me it the other day. She was like, were you more of an NSYNC or a Backstreet girl? And I was like, okay, I'll put it to you this way. One of my first concerts was the Backstreet Boys. Love them.
Solid.
But I think Justin Timberlake is one of the most talented singer, songwriters in the business, producers. I love him. I think he's a genius. And Future Sex Love Sounds is forever my favorite soundtrack, album. And we played that album to death on this set of Hairspray. We all had it. And we would all play it in our trailers at the same time. And we would drive the ADs insane because they would be like, we just came from Elijah's trailer. He's playing the same song. Like, can't you at least just sit in each other's trailers and listen to it together? Like, all we hear is Justin Timberlake. We tortured them. It was fantastic. I mean, so where do you stand on the boy band?
Well, you took the words right out of my mouth. First of all, my first concert was NSYNC.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so other way around.
Yes, I was never that into the Backstreet Boys. I didn't like their hits as much. Like, I really loved Backstreet's Back, and it pretty much stopped there. Whereas I felt like with NSYNC, all of them were bangers.
Yes.
I loved NSYNC a lot, and I saw them, and then I could not agree more. I think about Justin's album all the time, and I listened to it for like full summers. Because it actually really matures. Yes, this album is one of the best album experiences that you can have. And I kind of miss that ever since we got into shuffles and playlists and stuff.
Yeah, I think that's probably the last album that I've like bought and listened to front to back, you know.
Yes.
Wild. First one that I ever had, well, not album, but cassette, was Ace of Base. Followed by Melissa Etheridge.
And
I didn't know I was gay. What?
No, those signs that we catch just now.
I played down. 9 years of competitive softball.
Yes. No. 9 years. That didn't rub off on you.
that just get coming out of 32. You know, I think for me, it was that, you know, I just, when you start working so young or when you go to college mm-hmm. or when you, I think when you're focused on something, on a goal that is massive, and it's so big and you have to put all of you into it. I think sometimes, you know, it's kind of okay and normal. I feel like I was like always the girl showing up to the party without the date. Like I just was like, I was doing a show. So I was like, I didn't have time to find one. I wasn't really interested in finding, you know what I mean? Like, so I want to tell all the kids out there who aren't dating, like, that's fine too. Like, take your time, live your life, get to know yourself, do your plays, play your sports, do whatever it is. Take your time and then come into your own, because your own can be at 32, at 37, it can be at 57, it could be at, it doesn't matter. This is your life. You just got to own it, you know?
Absolutely. I was in that same cycle of like, oh, I'm in a show, don't need a boyfriend. When I basically was like harangued into dating my first boyfriend, who was the worst human, just simply the worst human. And then I kind of like serial dated guys after that. And I was like, well, no time to sit and think about it. So here I am at 36, like, uh-oh.
Well, you know, I dated guys too. There were a couple of fellas in there. And, you know, my first was on the set of Hairspray, my first boyfriend. Love him dearly. He's still one of my best friends. He was one of the backup dancers and one of the detention kids, like the sweetest human ever. And yeah, I dated guys for a while, and he was actually one of the first people I came out to. I said, I need to tell you something. He was like, what? And I was like, well, here you go. He was just so supportive. I mean, so it was, yeah, I found myself like in the relationships with men. I think with him, I was most present because we were filming a movie and everything was mad. Sure. We felt like we were in Disney World every day. But I think in the other relationships, as I got older, like I was in them, but I wasn't really in them. Like I was there. It's like your body's there, but I was mentally checked out.
Sure. Yeah.
'Cause I was like,
what feeling?
I really don't want to be here.
Yeah.
I remember when I got engaged, I remember that feeling of, oh shit, I just said yes for forever.
Oh no.
I was like, oh, that's what this is for, forever.
I got shit to do.
I was like, that's what Uncle Jesse was singing about, forever. I was like, no, I don't want to do this. And I was on a cruise ship. Yeah. See?
Yep, I sure do.
And it was a straight cruise. So you see what I'm saying? See
those malls, they'll get you every time. Always get you to buy shit you didn't want to buy in the first place.
Exactly. I walked off of that straight cruise with a bracelet I didn't want. I bought it for like $75. It was some kind of gold. I don't know what plated it was. Who knows? And I walked off it with that and a fiance I didn't want. So
no.
But I made it off. That was all that matters. And here we are. And you know, I mean, I'm by no means making light of the situation, but because I haven't spoken a ton about that situation, that for me, sure, that engagement was very much a that I plan to, you know, talk about whatever when I'm ready. But something about you just made me like super ready to be like, and it happened on a cruise ship, no less.
Amazing.
So thank you. Amazing. For just supporting me while I just told that fun little ditty.
I appreciate you.
Yeah, you know, life is all about wild experiences, and I think especially in this business, it's like I always say, I have this theory. I'm like, okay, so it's kind of like, you know how for 1 year for us, it's 7 years for dogs.
Yes.
Okay. In this business that we're in, 1 year for a regular person, not in the business, mm-hmm. is like 7 years for us.
Absolutely. So, in the most unfair of ways.
Yeah. I'm really like getting to golden girl status. Like I'm like, yeah. I'm definitely mid-50s, truly. Like
1,000%. So given enjoying more space for you to be really real and authentic with who you are, literally just physical space, not having to hustle, not having to show up on set or go to events or play the whole game. How has that really felt for you, hopefully within the safety that you've been in?
It's been, I had my first live performance, like since COVID, since coming out. It was just this past Friday in downtown LA, and it was super, super exciting. I was there with my partner in crime, my amazing friend, Ryan Casada, who is a brilliant musician. And we performed, and it was such a fun lineup. Kevin McHale was there and Austin McKenzie. Yes. And it was just such a fun night. And I remember getting ready for the show, and I remember I was ordering clothes. And normally back in my Hairspray days, it was heels. I was always in heels, 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 heels. Mm-hmm. You gotta be in heels. And you gotta have this ring matching to this earring to this. and we want you in color, and which it was all fine. But I'm very thankful for the people that I had guide me, in those times, because they picked some fantastic clothes. However, for this event, I found myself picking clothes that I was comfortable in and I wanted to wear because they made me feel sexy. I did not wear a heel.
Yes.
I did not wear a ton of jewelry. I did not wear a ton of makeup. I wore lashes. I did a lip. Like, I did it the way I wanted to do it. And I, like, my mom saw me over FaceTime and she was like, "You did your own makeup?" Like, and when my mom praises me on makeup, like, kind of makes me feel a little special. And aww. I was like, "Yeah, mom." And like, it was for the first time since coming out that I really, really, really felt like myself as a performer. Like I was my feminine self, but I was just myself. Like,
yes.
It wasn't like there wasn't any of that. It was just like, I was me and I felt so me. And there is no greater feeling than just being like, I just feel like so me right now.
Yes. Not feeling like you have to abide by anyone's rules, and it doesn't discount lashes or sequins or whatever.
Exactly.
It's just exactly where you fall at the juncture.
Exactly. And I think that's what's so special about the LGBTQ plus community, is because it's like, you can really just be yourself. And I'm so excited that we now get to do this show again, June 22nd.
Lovely.
We'll be performing at El Cid.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, here. And so we'll see what look I choose.
Oh, that's awesome. So I have to ask you, if this was your first time really performing, totally inhabiting yourself, did you feel like your performance was also freer and you were like, whoa, my throat is not so tight, or like whatever?
It was totally different. It was totally different. It was because it was with a live band, and I was not singing Hairspray. I sang Criminal by Fiona Apple and Bitch by Meredith Brooks.
Yes!
And I'm telling you, when I looked out there to the audience and we did a chorus of just, I'm a bitch. Everybody was just like clapping and singing along. And I just like, I remember that moment. Like that moment, I can still see it right now. And it's like, it was just, that's when I said to myself, now I'm performing as me and people are getting me. I'm like, now they're getting it. Like they're going along with my artistic transformation. I'm not Tracy Turnblad anymore. And they're okay with it. Yeah, and that's what I felt when they started singing back with me. They were like, oh, she's not singing Good Morning Baltimore. She's singing about being a bitch and a this and blah, but she's living. So we're going to live with her, you know? And I think.
Absolutely. And so, besides, I think you must know this in every bit of your being, but what people love about Tracy is just how she's like, yeah, I'm who I am. I'm going to do it. I'm going to make you freaking smile. And so like you doing that in any iteration, whether you've got a beehive wig on and are doing the mashed potato or not, that's going to be what resonates because that's just who you are. And that's what you're taking into the future. And like, you're also working on your own scripts too at this point, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I started writing and, you know, when the whole quarantine happened, I was like, I need to give myself something to do. Mm-hmm. And I started writing my book and then I started writing a screenplay for my best friend and I. And yeah, that's kind of led to a few other little projects. And I find myself now just, I eventually want to do a book of poetry and stuff like that.
I love that. That's so freeing.
It, you know, poetry is how I really started writing. A lot of people don't know this, but I started writing. I wrote my first poem when I was 12, when 9/11 happened. I was in gym class and I think I was in a cast because, well, I spent a lot of years in cast. I was just a very accident prone child.
And, plus 9 years of softball.
Yeah, exactly. and I was sitting in gym class and I wrote a poem about 9/11 and it ended up getting published and put in a book. And ever since then, it's just kind of been like this weird little thing that, yeah, I do. I write poetry and nobody knows about it.
I love that. That's glorious.
I mean, I know you're a writer and you are producing things as well. Are there any other weird little things like that I do that like you do? What else would you do?
I haven't really tried my, I wish. I'm not much for visual art, but I feel like I used to love taking on any medium of visual art until they kind of like made you choose in high school. And it was like, you could take pottery, painting, drawing, etc. Or you could do band, chorus, drama. Yeah. And I was like, well, see ya.
Yeah.
But I'm really into barbershop. So I'm a sweet Adeline. And I have, it's been a while, but I have arranged some of my, I've made some of my own arrangements of songs in a barbershop bent. So like when I'm just really doing my own thing, I'm happy to just dream that up and plunk it out and write it down on staff paper, which is, it's been a minute, but I've been singing barbershop since I was 14 because of all of the things that my high school had, including an active farming program. We somehow...
Of course we did.
Yeah, of course we did. And of course I ended up taking farming classes.
It's a total package, folks.
The whole package.
She performs. She does it all.
I can artificially inseminate a cow while... Holy damn, a melody line.
The woman is gifted. I mean, I couldn't artificially inseminate the moon. I mean, not. my hand eye coordination, not good. I was the catcher on the team. So,
of course.
You know, of course I was.
Of course you were. All these early signs, and we just didn't didn't catch up. I tried to be the catcher. I really wanted to be the catcher. So maybe like my little subconscious was like, hey kid, get in there. But I was so bad at it, I could never catch the ball. So they put me in left field, which is the least useful field.
Yeah, I've been there a few times whenever like there was like a sub catcher. Then occasionally they would put me on third base because I had a decent arm, but I was a crap runner. I'm 4'10". My legs are like me. So, you know, me running is like, you know, it's like one stride for the average human is like five for me. So like the minute I would hit a far ball and it would look like, oh, easy home run. But then everybody would realize that I hit it and they'd be like, oh, it's just going to be a double. And then by the time I would get to second base, my mom would just get a pinch runner and we called it a day. And I was like, are we at intermission now?
Yeah. Can we take five yet?
Exactly. I would always joke with my team members too. I would be like, guys, we have our costumes on. They're like, they're uniforms. I'm like, I tortured them because, you know, I was really the only like musical theatery, but also wanted to play ball.
So. Not a whole lot of overlap there.
Not a big overlap. And I'm seeing Melissa Etheridge. I mean, my friends really put up with a lot looking back now in the day.
That's so good.
Oh my gosh. So now, where do you live now? Are you out here in Los Angeles like me?
No, my best friend is, although she's moving to San Francisco soon. The TV and film started really booming here pretty much once I transitioned from theater to on-camera work, because yeah. I was so flummoxed by theater, but I was getting really warm receptions in my auditions for on-camera. And I'm like, are you kidding? They're more willing to put a fat girl on TV than they are on stage, which of course I could still rant and rail about for days, But I found a warmer reception there. And I was like, oh, you have to cast people who look like real run-of-the-mill everyday folks. And so I was initially thinking back in those early days, like, oh gosh, I'm gonna have to move to LA. But I ultimately didn't need to. And so like, it's sort of gonna be an as needed thing. We'll see where the world kind of settles. But I always figured, if I get a show and I have to be out there, I could like sublet and I could just go be out there temporarily for eight months at a clip and like come home.
Oh, there's a million ways to do it. I've been playing this game for 15 years and I'm always like, I don't live here. And then now I just, moved back in December. But I've lived in New York for like 10 years at a clip, you know, and then been back and forth. And you know, there's so much work in New York now too.
So
and not just in theater, in film, in TV, especially in indie film, which is so exciting. And I love that a lot of these streaming platforms are shooting in New York as well. So I'm like, more please. Because I would love to.
I'm looking for an excuse to come back. Come on. Yes. And we got our first multicam studio a couple of seasons ago because Kevin Can Wait was in there.
Yes.
So that was like the first time that we've had a live studio audience for narrative work.
Wow.
Ever since the 70s? I don't know. But it definitely in like my career. So who knows? I don't really know how anything's gonna like come back.
Well, you know, I was talking to, I'm getting ready to go back myself to filming and I'm excited. I'm a little nervous, but I'm excited because it's so different. But it's funny because when I started this particular film back in December, we were in Video Village and we were talking and my co-star said something about filming and I said, well, do you know that when I started filming. Okay. I said, it was actually on film. Are you kidding? I was in, it was actually on film. We actually had to check the gate. We actually had to, like, you know, I said, now everything is, it's, you know, what is it, HD?
Yeah.
Incredible.
4K HD.
It's
4K, like, you can see every blackhead.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, please, whatever makeup company is sponsoring us, please. I know that I talked about at the beginning of the podcast how I wanted to be au naturel, but really, please sponsor me.
Yeah, it's bananas how much labor has to go into the film itself. I think I've only shot on film once, and it's because Boardwalk Empire was committed to shooting on film.
What was that like? Because that show, I mean, the style of that show, and just, just
beautiful,
gorgeous,
beautiful, very warm. Very warm. And of course, because I'm in a body that didn't have a whole lot of clothing available for it, they had to make some creative choices with, like, the ancient silk and velvet that they pushed me into.
Oh god.
But touching these clothes was incredible. Seeing the set was incredible. Just so much care taken and creativity put into that whole experience. I mean, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. A lot of fun. Oh, when I did that episode with Rebecca Luker. Oh. Yeah. She was wonderful.
I mean, so lovely. There are so many just... It's nice now that we can, you know, look back in our old age.
Ridiculous. 7 years for every year. You are not wrong.
Every year. Yeah, no.
What on earth?
But, you know, isn't it nice, though, that we can look back and say we have those projects that when we think of them, our hearts just, like, get warm.
Mm, you know, I love that.
And that's, like, I think when I think of love, that's a feeling I very much correlate with it. It's like that warm, intense feeling in your chest that you're just like, you know? So yeah. I think it says a lot that we really do what we love, because
for sure,
you know.
And it's got that theater family energy to it, but then you can watch it and watch it happen all over again.
Yes. Well, that's what's so amazing to me. You know, gosh, here now, you know, this summer will be 15 years that we initially started making the movie. My 15-year high school graduation, folks. Oh my God. Didn't think I'd see it. Like what? How did that even happen? And yeah, so it's going to be 15 years. And the fact that each generation is finding it and finding what they love about it and just keeping it alive just makes my heart alive. Keeps me, it just, for because sure. I know, you know, there are certain characters for me, like growing up, the, you know, Mary Poppins, the magical characters that just take you on a journey. And I feel like Tracy, and there are so many awesome characters in that movie and in projects that you've done, that if we could just take people away just for a little while, you know, and just mm-hmm. make them feel like they're safe and, you know, be that for them. That's awesome that we can do that. You know, that's all I ever wanted.
Yes. I love that feeling. I love that feeling.
So what's new for you and what's going on? Where can we keep up with you?
I do have a podcast, which, by the way, if you're ever open to guesting,
I would love.
Fabulous. So excited.
You just tell Diana when and I will be there.
Gorgeous. I'm so excited. My best friend, Lillian Bussell, who is a plus size burlesque performer, she and I host a storytelling podcast called All the Fucks. And just as you were wont to talk about, like, who did we like best in high school? What did we dress like? That's pretty much the pith of our podcast.
I love it.
And I was like, I can't wait to see Nikki. I can't, tell me if you have any questions for her. And she was like, will she want to come on the podcast? I was like, I hope so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Consider me there.
Glorious. I will definitely let Diana know. Yeah, that's what I'm working on these days. I'm doing some like virtual play readings for Rattlestick and the Actors Studio. But for the most part, I've been writing a bunch.
Yeah. I'll get back to it.
I love it. Yeah, writing a ton and finding strength in my unique voice and like putting out seeds for what I hope we can get to make in the future, because just like unlocking all of your authenticity as a queer person, like I think there's so much power in claiming a narrative for us as women, as people on the LGBTQ plus spectrum, as plus size people. Like there's so much agency there, and the tides are changing. Like we don't have to just point to two characters ever anymore, but definitely needs more, because I believe plus size women are like 68% of the population. And so we should be reflected in 68% of protagonists. Just saying.
I am right there with you. There was a movie that I did where they said to me, my character, she was an insecure girl and she picked mm-hmm. apart her body, the parts that she didn't like. And there of was course. A scene where she was in the mirror doing this, whatever, whatever. And they said, we're going to take it out. And I said, why? And they said, well, because we don't want to make you uncomfortable. Like, you know, you have to stand there in your bra and your pajama pants and like, you know, hold your stomach. And I said, I'm not uncomfortable. I said, this is my body. I live in this body every day.
Yes.
24/7, 365. I said, I think you're afraid. Like, this is like, I don't know who I thought I was. This is like, I'm talking to like one of the heads of the network. I'm like, but, I just want to let you know that most of the country looks like me. Okay. They don't
yes!
look like, you know, Heidi Klum. I was like, so I said, if you want a movie that's relatable, that people can relate to, then you'll let me shoot this scene. And I said, it's not going to be uncomfortable for me. It'll be uncomfortable for you. And we shot the scene. And for me, it was about the representation. I wanted whoever was watching it to be like, okay, holy shit, like we never see like a plus size girl in a bra, like whatever. Like, and I was so just glad that we did it, because,
perfect.
You know, there needs to be, and again, like you said, owning your voice and taking control of what you do and what you put out.
Love it.
So I wish you well. I have no doubt that I will run into you many, many, many a times.
Yes, I'm so excited for that.
You know I'll be back on the East Coast eventually. I mean,
you know you will, because you don't really live in LA.
Right. I've just been, you know, pit stopping here for 8 months. just a little, you know, a little bump in the road. But New York will always be my home, and I'm coming back. My brother is getting married. My little brother.
Oh, mazel tov. That's wonderful.
Yes, he's getting married, so I got to come home and, you know, for his engagement party eventually. So
sure.
I'm coming back to the East Coast, and I will let you know. But hold it down for me until I get there.
Happily.
All right. I'll see you soon, sister.
Thanks, Nikki.
Be good.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh my gosh. What a delight. What a delight Jen is. I absolutely adore her, and I adore her for being so open and honest and candid about everything that she's gone through in her personal journey. You know, it's like, everybody's journeys are so vastly different, but they're so vastly beautiful. Not like the noise that's going outside my window, but what can you do? It's life, folks, and it's live. So anyway, Jen, thank you for sharing your stories and for sharing your heart, for sharing your talent with the world, because you are one gifted woman. And I adore you. I adore you already. So congratulations again on coming out, my friend, from one member of the LGBT community to another. Congratulations. And I'm so, so, so incredibly thrilled for you. And I'm sending you so much love. And I'm sending you all so much love during this month of Pride. It is Pride Month, everybody. And I just want to tell you all that I love you all deeply from the bottom of my soul. Thank you so much for embracing Tracy Turnblad 15 years ago in 2007 when the movie came out. But thank you for embracing me and loving me for who I am. It means more than you know. And just know that I love you for who you are, and you're all absolutely incredible, and you make my day every single day. So happy Pride. I love you all. Bye.